We present Bright Day by J.B. Priestley, dramatized in six parts by Eric Pringle. Episode 5. The year is 1945. Successful screenwriter Gregory Dawson is trying to finish a film script for the actress Elizabeth Earle. As the hotel trio plays a selection of music that reminds him of his youth in the northern town of Brudersford in 1914, he finds himself remembering also the Allington family, and in particular their daughters, Joan, Eva, and Bridget.
It was the next day, yesterday, that we had our dreadful row. I still don't know why.
My fault, Liz. In the night, I felt bereaved.
That's what Jock Barniston's sister said you'd feel.
And then George Adderney dragged me out of bed.
Wake up, Gregory!
George. What's the matter? What's going on?
I am having breakfast with you here. I want to talk about the script. And we have only a little time because Jake and I are catching the 11:30 train. You are having porridge, coffee, and fish cakes. Story conference. It is a good story.
Just between ourselves, George. I'm beginning to hate the damn story.
Why is that? What is the matter with it?
I don't know. Maybe it's because it's not like anything that ever happens. It's beginning to bore me.
We are making a movie. This is a good story for movies. Full of nice twists and little surprises, never standing still. With plenty for the two stars and for me. It has its own point of view.
Perhaps I don't like its point of view any longer. Perhaps it seems cynical now. You say it's a good story, and it is. Has all you want and all they'll want. But I'm starting to ask myself, at 50, what has it got that I want?
This is not like you. You should get married, my friend, while you are still attractive to women and can pick and choose. Elizabeth, for instance. Though for you, an actress, especially a star, is probably a mistake. What will you do now?
Work, George. Then have lunch with the star.
Greg, we aren't going to be left alone. Leo Blatt's coming.
Leo Blatt? Damn. I don't want him here.
He's my agent. He was yours once. You put me on to him, remember? You said he was the best agent in Hollywood, and he wants to see you too.
All right, I won't say another word.
Why are you being so stuffily British? What's poor Leo done?
He's insufferable. Thought of him bouncing and barking about. He's the type that makes Americans so unpopular here.
Well, you wouldn't have said that a few years ago. You're beginning to talk about America as the isolationist there talk about Britain.
Well, some of us here in the film business feel bitter, Liz. When our people were up to their necks in the war and living like rats in holes, what did they see at the pictures? The Sunset Boulevard notion of the war. The American way of life. Yanks winning the battle for democracy. And bland films about London.
I was in two of those. They did a lot of good over there.
It was cheap muck, Liz. We crowded out honest war pictures made here by people who knew what it was really like. And there's another thing.
All right, Greg, I can take a bit more.
I came back here to write film scripts if they wanted me to, because that's the only thing I really can do. Well, they did want me, and I co-produced some films as well. They weren't masterpieces, because we had all kinds of difficulties, but they were honest-to-God jobs. You never saw one of those pictures.
I saw the one about the factory. Sam Grumman had it run through for me at the studio. I cried.
He ran it through for you as a favour. Our pictures weren't shown over there. But their insulting rubbish was forced down our throat.
Because the exhibitors need box office names.
I've heard it all. Come on, let's have some coffee. And I'll work, and by dinner time I may be strong enough to face Leo Blatt.
Greg, we're not arguing about America and Britain, are we? We're just fighting. And the fight's going on somewhere behind the argument. This isn't us. Why are we doing it?
I'm sorry. Something's happened inside me. It's making me peevish. I'll be better tonight.
I hope so. But you weren't, Greg. You were worse.
So what's the news, Leo?
Well, Technicolor's on the up and up. So is television. Ooh. The stereoscopic motion picture will be with us soon. The coast's humming with ideas.
But it's got a big problem. The bosses of the industry are a bunch of parasites sucking the life out of it.
Ooh.
They decide what films should be made, but they can't write, can't direct, can't make a set. They wouldn't know how to start.
Hey, wait a minute, huh? I mean, these big executives can hire plenty of fellas to do all that. Now, they organize and finance production, and they market the product.
So what? They shouldn't employ the creative people. They should be employed by them. It's the wrong way round. I'm tired of seeing a wonderful medium bitched up by moneylenders and salesmen and second-rate solicitors on the make.
Elizabeth, all these Reds over here have been getting at him.
Something has, Leo, that's certain. Let's eat. We need more food and less drink.
Ha! Loopy Melons! Baby! Well, God. Now, shall I tell him now, Liz?
Oh, yes, now.
Tell me what?
Well, I was talking to Sam last night. He wants you back. He's got big plans, and you can be part of them. You can co-produce as well as script. Now, naturally, he's got some ideas of his own, but he'll listen to you.
Leo, don't bother. I'm not going back. I'm never going back.
Greg!
No, I'm sorry, Liz.
You have to.
Now, wait. I know how you feel, Greg. And I guess I'd feel the same way. You come back here because of the war, and you produce some swell little motion pictures and the difficulties. It's too bad they didn't have better releases on our side, but you know how it is.
Yes, I know how it is.
Now, look, Greg. I don't expect some of these fellas in London to face the facts because they don't know. They haven't been around long enough yet. But you,
Leo.
You ought to know that over on our side, we aren't playing at being in the motion picture business. It's one of our big industries with a mountain of good American dollars behind it. And if we have to get tough, we can be plenty tough.
That's beside the point.
No, it isn't. I'm warning you not to put yourself out where it might be freezing cold soon.
I'll tell you that, Chance. I'm staying here.
To do what, Greg?
I don't know, Liz. I don't know what I'm going to do. I only know what I'm not going to do.
Oh, darling.
Hey, now this is getting far too damn serious, huh? I'll tell you what. I got some poker chips in my bag, huh? I'll go and get them and collect a few people. We'll play a little poker. We can talk business afterwards.
You didn't tell me you decided never to go back.
I didn't know until Leo asked me.
Greg, I don't understand you anymore. What's happened? Will you come out with me tomorrow and tell me? I've hired a car.
Yes, Liz, I will. I'll tell you all I can.
So, here we are. What did you do while we played poker?
Went up to my room. Returned to Bruddersford for the last time. I went back to her death. And the death of a time. And a little world and a part of myself. During the first months of 1914, Nixie worked with us in the sample room. Because Lunan said we had to let him do what he wanted to do. Joe Ackworth hated it. And one morning, between Easter and Whitsuntide, things changed in Canal Street forever.
Right, Gregory, come on. We'd better get them samples of crossbred tops off to Gothenburg and Breslau.
Where are they?
I don't know, Mr. Ackworth. I've been looking for them.
Well, we put them out last night.
I know, but they're not there.
Well, they must be. Where's Nixie? Happen he knows.
I haven't seen him.
Well, let's have another look. What are you looking so smug about, Croxton?
Nixie called in early this morning. He's going to London. He took those samples.
Hell, fire! Who the blazes told him to go to London? Who told him to take them samples without asking me or Mr. Allington?
Well, probably London office. After all, he represents them here, doesn't he?
Well, that's news to me! Perhaps it isn't to you. You're one of them clever dicks that haven't got any real gumption. And when Nixie come here, you thought, that's the chap for me. Smart London chap. I'll get in with him. Well, Nixie's so sharp, you'll cut your fingers on him. He's not here to learn any bloody wool trade. Chaps like him don't learn trades. It won't surprise me if, when I've gone, and Mr. Allington finds himself pushed out, And happen there's a boom in the wool trade. Well, one morning, you'll come in here and find Nixie and his uncle have gone and sold this business, and all you've got is your notice. And when that happens, don't come to me looking for a job, because I won't give you 30 bob a week working the hoist.
When I want a job with you...
I've no more to say to you! Except I hope you're satisfied. You've been busy helping to muck up one of the best little firms of the Brudersford train. But no bloody good will come of it. To you or anybody else. Now get back to your office.
Wait till Nixie hears about this.
Yeah. Mr. Rackworth?
I'll give you a bit of advice, Gregory. If something's done that you think isn't right, fight it like bloody hell, bang off. Don't give in and then let yourself be pushed and pushed, else you might find it's too late to start fighting back. And just one more push and you're over the edge.
You're thinking of Mr. Arlington, aren't you?
Yeah, that's not for you to say, lad. We're just...
Hello? What's been going on in here, then?
John, thee and me have got to have a talk.
Uh-huh.
I've stuck this as long as I could. Chiefly for your sake. But now I've had enough.
Nobody took Ackworth's place. And Mr. Arlington spent more of his time with Nixie and me in the sample room. Sometimes Croxton came out to give us a hand. And he and I had a few rows. Mr. Arlington seemed to be pretending that everything was all right, but I felt it was going to pieces. Then, on a Sunday in June, death arrived among us. I'd been invited to join the Arlingtons, who were going with one or two friends up the dales to Pikeley Scar, famous cliff that marks the end of the limestone country. Through the woods below the Scar, a river flashes among the rocks, making pools and little cascades. It's a wonderful place for a picnic. Jock Barniston and I met at Wabley Station, intending to meet the Arlingtons near the Scar for a late picnic. It was a dazzling June day. Everything seemed perfect. Except at the last minute, I was saddled with an interloper.
This is Laura Blackshaw, Jock. She's 10.
I'm pleased to meet you, Laura.
Hello.
Laura's parents are away, so she's staying with us. She came with us last summer to Silverdale and followed me around the whole time.
She must like you.
Used to bribe me with sticky sweets, didn't you, Laura?
Yes, I did. There are buttercups on this side and daisies. Look, there are cows now.
What's the matter, Jock? You're not your usual cheerful self.
Sorry, lad. I'm a bit worried about Eva.
Why do cows stare so much? Well,
they're not really staring. They're thinking things over while they chew their dinners.
What are they thinking about?
Nobody knows. You watch them and try to find out.
I will. And then I'll tell you. Cows are thinking
about... What about Eva?
Ben's given me a letter for him. She thinks he's coming today, but he isn't. I think the letter does more than explain why. Eva's going to have a bad day, Gregory.
Ben's tangled up with Nixie's wife. Eva should forget him. He's not worth bothering about.
He is, you know. Even if you don't like him. There's no real harm in Ben. He's a fool at times, like the rest of us, but he's just right for Eva, and she knows it. We must do all we can for her today. I'm not feeling happy about this.
Jock, do you ever get the feeling that things are slipping out of control?
More and more, lad.
Why are you two so miserable?
There's Stanley Mervyn.
Stanley!
Hello, lad. It is a grand day.
Aye, where's Mrs. Mervyn?
Gone on. That's her up yonder. She's sweating like a boiled pudding. I've been trying to sketch a bit, but you can't get the tone right with this limestone country.
I'll give her a hand. Gregory, you help Stanley.
Aye, of course. Here, let me take your painting gear.
I'm not an old man, lad. But thanks.
I think you're a funny man.
Well, you're right, love, I am. You know, the only thing I regret is that I didn't do what I wanted sooner. Instead of wasting so much good time in the wool trade. Let me give you a bit of advice.
Go on, Mr. Mervyn.
If you've got something in you that wants to be let out and goes on nattering at you day and night, then let go of everything else and get it out, or it'll go bad in you. Well, that's your life, lad. If you do, even if you have nought for dinner but tea and bread and dripping, you'll be alive. And that's a damn sight more than half these chaps stinking with brass can say. Business? I'll give them business.
Oh, what?
You're puffed, Gregory. You must be jolly unfit.
It's all this stuff. Look at Mr. Mervyn.
Leva, can we talk somewhere?
What is it, Jock? Is something the matter? Eva thought one of you was Ben. She's disappointed. Look how Joan is watching her. She's jealous of any girl Jock looks at.
That's just catty, Bridget.
It isn't, you know. You, Laura Blackshaw, want the lavatory.
How did you know?
I know everything. Well, we don't have a lavatory, but we do have woods. Come on. Gregory?
I'm sure.
Eva's crying.
What's up?
Well, I can't eat another thing. I think Laura would like to go down to paddle in the stream. Oh, it's the wood, it's the wood. Can Gregory come too? Wood like that, is it? Well, if you want him.
Oh, that's very gracious of you, Bridget.
Come on, chum. Now, don't you go splashing in.
I will. It's just idyllic.
Our wee oldies will stay here. Snooze in the shade.
I'm going to walk up to the scar top. Jock, will you come with me?
Of course I will, Eva.
Then I'm coming too. All right, Eva. Jock, take my arm.
Laura's happy.
So am I. Let's sit on that rock, shall we? Race you there.
You're on.
I won.
Of course you did. You started first.
Don't be niggly.
I'm not. Oh, Bridget. This is an enchanted place.
Well, there speaks the romantic. But I agree with you.
Do you?
Quite a lot, actually. I understand you. Because you want the same as me.
Everything.
Yes, everything. I want to fill the world with music.
And I want to write for the world.
And live. Oh, so much.
Life, souls, life. Shalom, pop, Peter!
Gregory?
I know, Bridget.
I think you do.
Yeah, I do.
It's all there, isn't it? Spread out, waiting for us.
Bathed in sunlight. Isn't it marvellous?
I've never talked to anybody about it.
Nor me. Isn't it marvellous?
But Gregory...
Yes? Bridget?
It's impossible.
Not if we really want it.
You mean, if they'll let us be...
There you are.
Hello, Jock.
This looks like some sort of idyll. I left Eva and Joan sitting on that little ledge just below the top of the scar. Too warm for me up there.
What's the matter? Is it Eva?
I brought her a letter from Ben, telling her he's in love with somebody else.
Well, we know who that is, don't we? How could he? Think of Eva and that silly, scratchy woman.
Has she taken it very badly?
Yeah, she has. And Joan's in a bad mood.
Oh, Joan's jealous because you are paying attention to Eva. Oh, golly, she can be beastly sometimes. Really queer and horrible.
Bridget.
You want me to go up there, don't you? All right. Gregory, thank you for our talk. I enjoyed it very much.
That sounded almost like goodbye.
No, that's just Bridget.
Oh, I don't understand women, Gregory. I never have. I didn't like it up there, I'll tell you. Couldn't do any good. Probably made it worse. Eva needs Bridget. That's why I came down. Where's Laura?
Upstream, paddling. Laura?
I'm fishing.
There you are. She's all right. She's probably getting herself...
What on earth? Come on.
Oh,
Here's Laura. She looks as if she's seen a ghost. Laura?
I was...
It's all right. Stay there. Don't move. Hurry. Oh, God. Look. At the bottom of the cliff. I see it. It's pink. That's Eva's dress. Jock, it's Eva.
Eva.
She's moving, isn't she? Isn't she, Jock? Eva. Isn't she?
No, Gregory. She isn't moving. Oh, Eva.
Eva!
What's happened? Eva?
Eva! Eva, darling. Oh, my darling.
Shut up, Laura.
Take Laura home, Gregory. Take her now.
Gregory?
It's all right, Laura.
Will you hug me?
Oh, of course.
Gregory,
tell me about school.
School?
Or home.
But, Gregory, this afternoon...
Look at the fields. See the buttercups and dandelions? Remember them?
Oh.
It's all right. There now.
I forgot my haversack.
The inquest was confused, but finally it determined that Eva Allington met her death by accident, having fallen from the ledge near the top of Pikely Scar. The funeral was horrible, and had nothing to do with the golden, smiling Eva I remembered, forever sleepy in her sunny afternoon. Then the day after the funeral, we had a message at the office that Mr. Allington had collapsed.
Oh, darling, not him too.
That left Nixie and Croxton in charge of Halls and Company. And were they pleased with themselves? I thought of walking out on them, even though they gave me a rise of 10 shillings a week. But it didn't seem worth moving, because now, like Jock, I was sure everything was coming to an end. I didn't call on the Allingtons because the children were away and Mrs. Allington was busy nursing her husband. Then Bridget and Oliver returned, and on a Sunday evening I plucked up courage to go.
Father isn't much better, Gregory.
Oliver, I'm so sorry about everything. How is Bridget? I mean, how are you all?
Oh, you know. Excuse me.
Of course.
Hello, Oliver.
Good grief.
We just called to ask about your father.
We didn't mean to stay.
It's all right. Mr. Nixie... But just go through. I'll ask Mother.
Hello, Dawson.
You've popped up again.
Yes, I have, haven't I? I say, Dawson, what do you think of this Austrian Archduke fellow being assassinated in Sarajevo?
I don't know very much about him.
Malcolm says it will have consequences.
Consequences?
These things always have consequences.
Hello, Bridget.
Gregory. You want to know how my father is, Mr. Nixie? He's very ill. That's because my sister died... And because before that, he'd been very worried. Between you, you two have done it all. You came here and spoiled everything.
How dare you?
Look here, you don't know what you're saying.
Oh, yes, I do. Stay where you are. You're not leaving until I've told you what I think of you. Grabbers. Greedy, selfish, wicked grabbers. That's what you are, both of you.
I don't have to listen to
you. You came here to sneak in and take my father's business away from him. He was happy there before you arrived. And now you've got it. You probably don't even want it.
The girl's hysterical. Let's go, Malcolm.
And you, Mrs. Nixie, you're another grabber. You took Ben Carey away from Eva just for amusement. Well, now Eva's dead. I don't think she wanted to live. And you helped kill her. Now, get out. Both of you, and never come near us again.
Come on, Eleanor. Bridget.
I had to tell them, Gregory.
You were right. Everything you said.
I hate them. I hate them.
So do I. Bridget. It's all right. It's all right. I love you.
What?
I love you.
No. No.
What?
That's stupid.
What do you mean? It isn't stupid.
It is! And I'm going away again. Goodbye, Gregory.
Goodbye. Bridget. Bridget!
Greg? Darling?
Bridget was right. It was goodbye. She went away to the seaside and her mother and father joined her there. By the time she got back to Bruttersford, the war had started and I'd disappeared into the army.
But didn't she...
I wrote her a long letter. She didn't reply. I didn't see her again.
But that's so sad.
Well, there you are, Liz. That's the story. I still don't know what it means.
It means a lot, because remembering it has changed you. You're a different person.
I feel like Dorothy Barniston's prophecy. A lost soul searching for something that can't be found. But what is it, Liz? What am I looking for? I have to know.
In episode 5 of Bright Day, David Hargreaves played the older Gregory Dawson, Peter Kenny, the younger Gregory, Frances Jeter, Elizabeth Earle, and Steve Hodson, Ackworth. Gareth Armstrong played Mr. Allington, Elaine Claxton, Joan, Tara Dominic, Eva, Teresa Gallagher, Bridget, Tina Gray, Mrs. Allington, and Paul Panting, Oliver. Malcolm Ward played Jock Barniston, Gavin Muir, George Adeney, Peter Whitman, Croxton and Leo Blatt, David Jarvis, Nixie, Susanna Corbett, Eleanor Nixie, and Nina Wadia, Laura. Music was played by Les Brown, Lawrence Rossi and Tony Gamage. Bright Day is dramatised in 6 episodes by Eric Pringle from the novel by J.B. Priestley, and is directed by Adrian Bean.